Hello, and welcome once again to Drunk on Comics. This is our podcast about comic books, conventions, all other things nerdy related to the comic book field. My name is Derek. Once again, I am joined by brothers Tony and Matt. Gentlemen, how are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
Good. Matt, Tony?
I'm doing all right. I need to quick interrupt you for a second.
Really? You think you can just step in?
Yes, there's breaking news in the Twitterverse last week. So last week, we talked about Space Punisher.
Ah, I was wondering where you're going with this.
And I kind of got called out on giving my opinion without reading the book.
Actually, and you were called out by the author.
Yep.
Frank Thierry.
Yep. And Frank kind of said, you know, basically, you know, to the one guy that read it, thank you. To the other guy that didn't read it, you know, go read it. And I kind of have to say, the saying of you can't judge a book by its cover, well, in comic books, you kind of can. You kind of have to. Because you look at the cover, and that's what you're going to decide if you're going to be picking up that book this week or not. With Space Punisher, that's kind of what I did.
You prejudged.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, sometimes you judge wrong, and then you miss out on a good story. I did actually read it, though, and I want to say that it was actually good. My initial opinion was taking an Earth Frank Castle and just throwing them in space sounded totally dumb. But when you start to get to look at this as a totally different universe from the now universe, and just send them into space, gives it a different mission, gives it a different take on it, and it doesn't screw up with continuity. I think that was the biggest problem with me is anything in books, continuity, I think, is the you know backbone of comic books. And when you just kind of say, we're just going to forget all this stuff and just throw them out in space, that's what I had the problem with. But actually reading it, seeing the art and seeing where it's going, it's a very good freaking book.
Yeah, it's cool. Like I said, I mean, it was not what I expected. And Matt, you haven't had a chance to read it yet.
No, I'll try to pick it up this week.
Yeah. Frank, call out Matt this week on Twitter.
But it's cool. You know, it's kind of like an Elseworlds or a What If type thing, you know. And so I enjoyed it. I'll be picking up issue two.
Yes, I love stories that are, you know, the what ifs. I just think that Marvel could make it a little clearer sometimes as to where things are falling in the continuity. Maybe on the, you know, opening page, letting us know, you know, what universe this is happening in and stuff like that.
Right. Well, and I think part of it, too, is that, at least with this book, when I saw the preview for it, you know, which I saw on Comixology's pull list, it didn't say, like, I mean, it's a, you know, it gave, like, a very, very brief one-line thing, and I was like, that just seems weird, but it was weird enough to make me go pick it up. So, but I guess there's something to be said, yes and no, for whether or not it should be said that it's a what if right up front. But
well, yeah, and just letting us know, you know, where it falls in the realm of time, yeah, logic, space.
If it's 616 or whatever it is.
But I just kind of say, you know, us here at Drunk on Comics, you know, we stand by our opinions, and they are just opinions. But if you disagree, let us know. We may revisit the topic.
It's kind of fun actually getting the feedback because then, you know, we know more about what you like and all that, too. So.
Well, and any good, you know, conversation worth going anyplace and having good discourse, you know, requires that feedback from people. And we'll be happy to put in the extra research and to take the extra time to really tackle a subject. If people are going to respond to it and it's important to them, we'll love to talk about it.
Yeah, so. I mean, and another good example from last week, actually, was the new Captain Marvel. Tony and I both really enjoyed that book. Me in particular, I fell in love with it. I said it was a 10 out of 10. There are a lot of people that I've seen online that have responded that I actually heard the term, as far as the artwork, offensive. And I think it's one of the most beautiful books I've seen in a long time. So, you know, it's a great thing about this stuff is that artwork and stories are all subjective. So, but
I just want to say, Frank, if I see you at a con, I want to shake your hand for calling me out and just having me read your book. So,
yeah, I do like it when you get called out. So, well, before we go too far in it, this is your warning. We are going to be talking about books from this week. I think there might even be one from last week. I'm not sure. But we are going to be talking spoilers. So we talk about what goes on in the book. If you don't want to hear it because you haven't read your books, please hit pause now, go read your books, and then come back and listen to us later. So that said, we're going to jump right in, and I'm going to lead it off this week, fellas, because I really want to talk about Uncanny X-Force number 28. It's from Marvel. It's written by Rick Remender, art by Julian Totino Tedesco and Justin Ponsor, and the cover done by Jerome Opeña, who I believe has done every single one of their covers. So
I just want you to hit pause so that I can go read it before we discuss it. Spoiler alert, I'm going to get...
Yeah, I know you guys haven't read this one this week, but I wanted to tell you guys about this, which, you know, that's kind of what we do anyways. We sit around, we just tell each other about the stuff that this we've cool. read, too.
Yeah.
So to give you a little bit of background, and for those of you listeners at home that haven't caught up on this, in the last issue, Phantom X got killed.
Son of a bitch!
Yeah. Phantom X got killed by the new Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. They were trying to gain control and possession of the reborn Apocalypse, who's a child also known as Evan. Phantom X got poisoned by Mystique in a sex club, and then, but she was she was appearing as Psylocke. He bangs her, even though he knew it was her, even though he knew it was Mystique, which I think is great.
Oh, yeah.
But she poisons him. The poison takes away his powers, so he doesn't have his regenerative abilities, and then he gets his heart cut out by the skinless man, sacrificing himself for Psylocke. So, after he died, his sentient ship, Eva, has started to take on a humanoid form, and so she's basically joined the team of Uncanny X-Force at this point. The team goes back to the X-Cavern or whatever their little hideout is.
X-Cave.
Yeah. Cavern X, I don't know. And Ultimaton appears. They're ambushed, and he comes in with Gateway, gets in there, and then snaps Gateway's neck, killing Gateway. So, in two issues, there have been two deaths, back-to-back. Psylocke takes control of Gateway's mind briefly before he dies and manages to teleport the team out of there before Ultimaton self-destructs and blows everybody to pieces. She didn't have enough time, nor did she understand his power enough to verify where or when they were going, and they appeared 30 years in the future. So, the cool thing with this is that in this timeline, now they run into Deathlok. In this future, Evan does become Apocalypse. Wolverine creates an X-Force army, kills Evan and anybody else that stands against them. X-Force basically becomes heroes, and then they start using precogs, just like in the movie Minority Report, and going and killing people before they kill anyone else. So it's become this tyranny where they were heroes, and now they run everything. And so that was just a teeny little bit of backstory, but then they put him in here. The world is run by Magistrate Betsy Braddock, which, you know, Psylocke's a little bit pissed off about. And here's the part that got me a little bit upset, and it's the last panel. In order to get this to keep from happening, she commits harakiri and shoves her sword through her own stomach. Now, three issues, three deaths now. So, I freaked out, because Psylocke is one of my favorite two characters, and they'd better not kill her. So,
did this happen in the world, though?
It happened in the future world, but it is current. It's our 616, Betsy Braddock, that's in the future, that she traveled into the future, then she killed herself there to keep that future from happening. Now, here's the thing, because Rick Remender has talked about how Phantom X is going to stay dead. That they aren't bringing him back.
I am so kind of upset right now.
I don't know about Gateway. But I'm like going, uh-oh. If they kill Psylocke, I'm going to be more than a little bit upset on this one. Well,
she's died before.
Well, she died, but she got... But
yeah.
It was died as her... You know, she was transferred into another body. So, yeah, there's a way around it. So I cheated a little bit. I went to the Marvel previews book, which I normally just keep and let it sit until that month is, you know, coming up, because I don't like to go ahead. And I saw her in there, but then the only reason I'm bringing it up, because if I'd been a little bit smarter, on the very last page, the preview for the next issue, you can actually see her in the background in it. So it's kind of hard to see, but at least she's there, so I know she's not dead. So I'm happy.
Judging the books by their cover again.
Yeah. So now, a couple little things on this Rick Remender. Like I said, I told you last week, Tony, I don't think this guy can do any wrong. I love his writing.
He just killed Phantom X. He can do wrong.
You know, I'm okay with that. I was never a big fan of Phantom X. You know, I don't know why. This was the first issue for Julian Totino Tedesco on the art. Very dark, beautiful, and it's exactly what I would want on this series, but it was very dark. So that's this one. I think it's a great book. Boys, I don't know if you got anything that you want to ask about or just talk about as far as the...
I don't want to read them. I want
to... You're going to cry, Tony.
It's okay, Tony. It's in the Marvel Universe, death has a revolving door, and who knows when Phantom X will come back.
Yeah, that's true.
Might not be during this run, but, you know, give him a year or so.
Yeah. So.
Year, 3 months, who knows.
Whatever.
I mean, how many times does Jean Grey come back? I mean, really. She's coming
twice
back.
And
she's coming back
and
again.
It's going to be three now. Yeah. So that does it on Uncanny X-Force. Tony, what did you read this week that you want to talk about?
All right, so I wanted to actually branch out and pick up something new, and I picked up Superman number 11. The story in pencil art by Dan Jurgens, finished art by Marino, sorry if I'm butchering your last names, Cifuentes, and Hunter. I've never been really a Superman person. I just think that he's an invincible, except for a rock, which seems that every villain has access to.
And Batman.
Yeah.
Batman has access to it, too.
It seems like the stuff is so, like, rare, yet, oh, I'm a bad guy. I have some kryptonite now. I want to go up against you. I've just never liked his perfect do-good attitude, and that's why I've just never really liked the Superman persona. He is just too super.
Now, is it because... because he has no flaws, really, or is it because he's an unrelatable character?
I think kind of unrelatable because he has no flaws. It doesn't make him seem real. In a world where you're getting shot at this and that, and you lose your anger maybe every once in a while, but you don't really go apeshit on a bad guy who just murdered your family because you're always that good, I just feel like there's a flaw in the character. But as going with the kind of theme, the reason why I picked this up is because I judged the book by its cover. And on the cover, the reason it said "The Secret of the Suit Revealed."
Like his bathing suit?
Yeah, well, that's what I was trying to figure out, which suit they were talking about. His
costume?
Yes, pretty much.
And Clark Kent's suit?
No.
Like, is it got Velcro on it, which is why he's able to change so quickly in the phone booth?
The secret of the suit is it's from JCPenney, and he got a great deal.
And so with that, I was like, okay, this could be interesting. It's something different than, you know, just Superman saving the day and having bullet shot at him, bouncing off him. However, kind of disappointing. It's biotech nanobites type thing. Kind of like Tony Stark's suit, where it can kind of just form on him now. It's interesting in the concept to kind of explain how Superman can just have his suit appear on him underneath any of his clothes. So it's cool that they can kind of explain that. But that's the secret, that he just has a suit that can magically...
Well, I always, the weird thing is because I am a nerd, and the other night when I'm laying in bed trying to go to sleep, I started thinking about superheroes that wear their costumes underneath their regular clothes. And there's a couple things that have always, you know, thrown me off. Number one, the masks. So you got guys like Daredevil and Spider-Man, you know. But then they also have to have the gloves that they're carrying around. So, I mean, they're just keeping these in their pockets or what. But then Superman, if he's literally got that suit on or his, you know, his outfit on under his regular clothes, where is he hiding the cape?
Yeah.
It's tucked up in the front.
Oh.
It's all bunched up a little bit there.
Give him a little extra padding for the ladies.
Just a little bit. That's what attracted Lois Lane in the first place.
Yeah.
So with that, like, I thought it was going to be a lot more, you know, explanation of the suit a lot more, but it was literally a page that kind of showed it kind of biomechanically forming on him and that was it. So
you were a little let down by the secret of the suit?
Yes. I judged the cover as good, and then the story I'd take that back. Even though the reveal was lackluster, the story was actually pretty damn good. Because I've never really read Superman, this is actually one of the first Superman books I've picked up besides, like, Superman versus Terminator or, you know, the other random funny Superman things.
Maybe DC Marvel crossover.
First off, there's death all around. I don't ever remember there just being people just dead around Superman. Like, Superman always saves the person, always stops the bullet. And he comes into this Russian lab, and people are just dead all around. He goes into this Russian town, and he's just like, everyone's dead. And you see, the art was amazing, too, and you just see the people's dead bodies. And I'm thinking, this doesn't seem like Superman, like, that I've always known in...
So it's a lot darker than what you remember.
Yes, and I think makes it feel a little bit better. Like, it shows a little bit more emotion. Even his Clark Kent persona, when he was explaining, you know, in mind thought bubbles of, I'm going to hate this guy, and then they're talking about dinner over the night, Lois Lane and her cousin and this other random guy. And then he's like, oh, but I changed my mind. And you kind of see and get to understand and know this new Clark Kent and this whole new Marvel or DC reboot type thing. And then at the end, he was getting his ass handed to him by this villain. Not by using kryptonite, at least they didn't explain it, but somehow this guy totally destroyed him.
Who's the villain?
It doesn't have a name. Looks kind of like a Predator type thing.
Okay.
But it came from a different dimension. That's what the Russian scientists said. They were peering in this other dimension. Something peered back. It got over here. And Superman was saying how this guy's faster than the Flash, which is impossible. But this thing was going head-to-head with Superman. That was interesting. It was more than a brainiac person with a shaved head having his... you know, kryptonite bullets to attack them. This was a really hands-down good fight. So it's actually going to make me pick up the next one.
Wow.
Even with the judge, just because I want to know who this character is. Not a big DC fan, but the writing was kind of sweet. And
we've all said it before, and I think anybody that listens to this podcast can already tell that we aren't big DC people. You know, for whatever reason, growing up, we just never really got that attachment to him. But Matt, you keep looking like you're pondering something.
Oh, we could go on to a long tangent conversation of how I think Superman's a douchebag. and so I kept saying, do I want to say something or not? In fear of having the author call me out, having not read the story. Feel that in the theme of Superman, in the genre of Superman, you either have the kryptonite wielding villain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which gets him to his knees, and then somehow he gets the strength just enough to beat him in the end.
He's Rocky.
Then there is the... I also heard he is susceptible to magic, right? Or mind control. I still loved it when... I forget the guy's name. He was mind controlling him, and Wonder Woman had to break his neck, which started up the whole Infinite Crisis thing, because Superman was being mind controlled. That was really cool. But so you get the magic... or something like that. Or you just make this new villain that is even more powerful than Superman. And yet, in the end, Superman will somehow find a way to get a new power or get just a little bit more stronger and beat him. So, I guess I will be happy to hear through reading this or through Tony reading it and reporting to me if they come up with more creative ways for Superman to beat his people, other than just, you know what, I do have more strength than you. Well, I am faster than the Flash myself.
I think the one bonus that DC has right now is with that whole reboot of the New 52. You know, they can actually build in a lot more flaws.
That would be nice.
You know, they can build that in, because continuity from previous to that, it's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, they've wiped the slate.
Well, so. And I think that is the draw that I have to Marvel, is that so many of their characters are flawed. Mm-hmm. Even sometimes the flaw becomes a little bit too cliche, like in the case of Spider-Man sometimes. But you know, overall, those characters have real problems and they have to deal with them. Whereas Superman just always felt too godlike to me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, up next for me is Irresistible, number one, from Xenoscope Comics. This was written by Raven Gregory. This one I'm probably going to screw up. Art by Durlis, I think it is, Santa Cruz, and Franco Riesco. The art I got, or the cover art on this one, I got picked up cover A, which was done by Ali Garza, who I've always loved his work. And he does just fantastic covers for them all the time. And I don't know if he does anything for Aspen, too. I think it's primarily works for Xenoscope at this point. So, Irresistible number one. Little background on this. The main character in this book is named Alan. Got dumped by his girlfriend. Can't seem to get over. His buddies, I think, do the right thing, and they take him to the titty bar. So, unfortunately, Alan can't seem to enjoy motorboating strippers. So, he gets up and leaves the bar, comes across a group of thugs who are mugging this old woman. He intervenes, gets the shit knocked out of them, but he manages to distract them long enough, and then they leave the old woman alone. She asks him what he wants, if he can, she can repay him, and he cynically says that he wants every woman he meets to want him. What he doesn't know is that secretly she's a hot chick witch, so she casts a spell on him, and the next day, when he goes into the coffee shop, he literally gets accosted in the men's room by the little barista that waited on him. The issue ends with kind of a be careful what you wish for because you just might get it type of thing. So this could be a really fun book. I am definitely picking up the second issue. I liked the art. There's some fun stuff. Raven Gregory tends to get a little wordy for me at times. It's kind of like when we talked about the old school Silver Age books, how there's just a lot of dialogue. However, that being said, in fact, like, here's a perfect example where you have, you know, literally half of each panel on the page, which is probably maybe around page 5, is word balloons. The thing is that he's a good writer, though, and he really does have a good tone to the character. So while it is a little wordier than I would like, it's not dull at any point. I feel like, though, he could maybe let the artist do a little bit more of the storytelling and not have to use as many words in some cases, but it does work. The art is solid in this one. The women especially look amazing. But if there is any one publisher right now known for cheesecake, it's Xenoscope, and that's kind of what they do. There are a couple little fanboy shout-outs in there. The one stripper whose name is Snow, I think, is dressed up like Emma Frost.
Which yeah, is I saw great. That.
Yeah. And she talks about how she loves all these comics and lists off a whole bunch of them and writers and stuff like that. So I'm going to pick up the next issue. We'll see where it goes. But
well, judging by its cover here, this is definitely not the kind of book that you want mom to find. Because she might not understand that it actually has a deeper story than just a bunch of scantily clad women.
Which, but I don't know if you need anything more than that myself.
That's true, but with the gypsy witch curse and, it's going in a direction that doesn't always have to be just about going to the titty bar.
And you know, I mean, this is not a superhero, you know, story by any means. The one great thing is I went out to go visit my parents, and I was working on the review for this, and my dad's like, "When the hell did comic books start looking like that?" I said, "See, it's not all superheroes." So, Matthew, what did you read today or read this week?
I'm trying to catch up from last week, and I just want to talk a little bit about round 8 of A versus X. Just because at first I was skeptical about the X-Men versus Avengers when they first announced it last year, but I'm pleasantly surprised. I think Brian Michael Bendis does a great job telling the story. I love how his stories develop over many different titles. We get a little bit, and he does a really good job of incorporating that continuity.
Well, and there are a ton of writers on this one.
Yeah, this is true. I don't want to give all the credit just to Bendis, but I know that he's been the lead for most of the Avengers titles and for the main story, the AVX.
He didn't have anything to do with Fear Itself, did he?
I don't know. No comment. But also, a shout out to Adam Kubert for his pencils, John Dell for inks, and Laura Martin with Larry Molinar for colors. The art's great. I love, you turn to the first page of the comic and you get this big scene of Namor destroying Wakanda and just a caption at the title at the top saying "The Destruction of Wakanda by King Namor of Atlantis," making it like a very historical moment, right? Because Wakanda has just gone through the Doom War. They've lost all their vibranium, which makes it much more less powerhouse in the world economy and everything. Black Panther has been going through lots of things, and
well, he married Storm, and so he's apparently got her crying, whiny gene, attached to him.
Well, they're also though kind of fighting with this whole AVX thing. Yep. So
that's going to be in one of the verses coming up. I'm looking forward to that one: Storm versus Black Panther.
Should be a hands down Storm, even though that's one character I'd be happy if they got rid of.
You know what, though? But I think, we might have some Ike Turner, Tina Turner action going on there. Might, hey, spousal abuse. I want to see T'Challa wearing a wife beater.
No, I want to see him wearing a pimp suit.
I digress.
Which, by the way, I this is completely off subject, but I always remember when Ike Turner was on Geraldo Rivera right after that movie, What's Love Got to Do with It? And Geraldo's calling him out. He's like, because he's saying that, he's like, I never beat her. It shows me beating her all the time. And Geraldo goes, so you're telling me you never hit her? And he goes, I only hit that bitch with a closed fist once. I like how it was separate from an open fist to a closed fist. But anyway.
We do not condone spousal abuse. And we would definitely want to punch anyone who does beat their wife. Moving along.
What if the wife's beating the husband?
Yeah, she should get hit then.
What if it's Storm?
yeah. All right. Yeah, I'll
comic
punch,
book world.
I'll punch Storm.
All right. So we start with this historical moment of, it really kind of puts it in there that Wakanda is now pretty much down on its luck. Where they're going to go from here. It'll be really interesting to see where that picks up in the aftermath. But as we go through the issue, we get the sense that only Iron Man, who's got this big glowing ball of spare parts, he's going into the magical Kung Fu Kingdom with Hope and Logan, and he's bringing the Thunderer back. They're saying, we can't close down this portal, but we gotta close down this portal, and it's really been this tension that when it closes down, all the other Avengers are stuck on this side of it, right? Now they're here for the fight. We get some great shots of Namor getting pummeled, but of course he's got the Phoenix power within him, and the reason I wanted to review this book is because I love the character of Namor really shines out through this. With all of his power, he is every bit the dick, but also royal king that he comes across in all the comics.
The one thing on this, I was not as happy with this one as I had been with some of the others. I don't know what it was. I think maybe this miniseries is dragging out a little too long for me.
12 issues is going to is definitely, we got a few more months of this going on, and there's a whole lot of other things happening in other books, some of it very relevant. The stories that they had in New Avengers tying into the Iron Fist being some kind of training for harnessing the Phoenix power. Some of them, like the Secret Avengers, where Captain Marvel gets resurrected for like two issues and then gets to die again. I didn't see how they played in very well. But this main storyline is really picking up, especially since now Namor has been depowered. They have shown that the Scarlet Witch can break the Phoenix away from one of its hosts, but that Phoenix power goes back to the other four, making them stronger.
Yeah, so they're now all 5% stronger.
Yep.
So, one little thing, I guess, in there. So now that he's depowered, is he going to go back to wearing his banana hammock, or do you think he's going to keep the pants?
I think he'll go back to the banana hammock, and he'll probably spend some time underwater for a while, probably trying to get his kingdom back again, because I'm sure somebody else took it over in the meantime.
Probably come back as a bad guy.
I don't know. I think there might be some relationships with Emma Frost here in the future.
Oh, they've been teasing that though for a long time. And
I think with this with the Phoenix, we're starting to see the characters break with the Phoenix. The Phoenix 5, now the Phoenix 4,
mm-hmm.
Starting to break, and I'm really curious if some of them are going to be recast as villains again for the time being. top among them would be Emma Frost, the White Queen, and Namor.
And Cyclops.
And Cyclops. Well, I think Cyclops is gonna ride this storm out. This is my prediction. Cyclops is going to ride the storm out and realize how much he has failed and just feel really bad for himself.
Maybe that's why Black Panther is going to fight, because Cyclops is riding storm. Oh, wait, that's different completely. Well, go ahead.
The last thing I want to say is bringing in all these other characters and the continuity and stuff, the mental conversation that Cyclops has with Charles Xavier, Charles calling him out specifically saying, Scott, this madness has gone too far. All that I taught you, that I tried to instill in you as an X-Men, this is a punishing disappointment. And then Xavier basically threatening him, Scott, if you don't stop it, I will stop you. And, of course, right now, Cyclops is way too powerful to feel like he has any flaws. But it just leads me to believe that with the new X-Men teasing the return of the Illuminati, if they're going to be bold enough to bring in the Infinity Gems, is that going to be the source of power that they're going to level the playing field? Or are the Avengers going to say, we're still not going to cross that line of using the Infinity Gems?
Yeah, that I couldn't tell you.
Some predictions. It makes me excited for the next book to come out to see which direction it's going
to
go in.
I'm very curious to see where this whole story goes. But like I said, I mean, it's starting to drag. What I'm actually really enjoying are the stories in the other books more than I'm enjoying the main title. Tony, you got any thoughts on it?
I can tell you where the story is going now.
Into Marvel now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well,
I guess the final thing, the one thing that does bug me is that yet, even though we made this big deal about the portal closing to the magical Kung Fu city, apparently, Iron Man already had a backup system, so all the Avengers at the end do get teleported out, and they're still together so that they can fight. So that just kind of bugged me a little bit.
That's convenient.
Yeah, it was very convenient. Thank you, Iron Man. Thank you once again, Robert Downey Jr. for saving the day.
Yeah. So that book actually is going to be a really good tie into another book that I wanted to talk about this week, Wolverine and the X-Men number 14, written by Jason Aaron, art by Jorge Molina and Norman Lee, and the cover done by Nick Bradshaw. Sorry, I really enjoyed this one. You know, this week I was a little disappointed with the majority of my stack, and I had saved this Irresistible and Uncanny X-Force as the last three books in my stack, and I'm glad I did, because I was more than a little bit disappointed up till that point. Colossus basically goes and takes Kitty Pryde out on a date, showing off all of his power, and then he goes nuts.
Good old Russian nuts.
Yeah, he pulls a crazy Ivan. But, Tony, you read this one. What do you think?
I liked it, and when I started reading it, with some of the other tie-in the books, they've been taking specific Phoenix Fives and kind of tying them in, being them like just that singular person with these group of people kind of opposing them, to kind of set it apart from the main books, to kind of give these people that are trying to take on this specific one person and kind of making them seem a little bit worse for wear as well. I thought it was a good tie-in to go with the school to show what it is, what's going through his head, and how pretty much effed up they are. Yeah. I love that Iceman wanted to talk to Cyclops, and Cyclops like, no, I'm doing this. I'm fixing the San Andreas Fault. I'm going to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of said, I think we're on the wrong side on this.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. You know, I mean, basically you've got Iceman and Kitty Pryde and the other people specifically at the school that are switching their allegiance over to the Avengers. I thought what was very interesting in here, though, is when Iceman couldn't get any Kitty Pryde nookie, that he got all bitchy and cryy and said, I'm going to blow up this school or you marry me, type of thing. And she's like, no. Which, I love Kitty Pryde. She's always been one of my favorites as well. She's a very understated character as far as her power.
Well, her dedication to her students right now is very applaudable.
Yes.
And, I mean, even me, I'm kind of going like, you know, if there was world catastrophe and this stuff happening, why would you keep having classes? And then, you know, the answer kind of dawned on me, though, is like, but this is the world that they live in. There always is a world catastrophe and stuff, and that they're training these people to keep living and to keep their sanity throughout this chaos. And even for the teachers themselves, they have to keep teaching the students and having hope that it's going to get better because, you know, really, you know, with her phasing powers, she's only going to be able to do so much to actually help the conflict. But, you know, helping the next generation of mutants to maybe realize that just because we have godlike power doesn't make us gods.
Yeah.
Which is more important.
Which in this issue, Colossus definitely feels that he is a god.
Yeah.
Up until the end, the very end, when he ends up leaving, and you can tell that he's got some personal strife.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, Colossus has been one of my favorite characters.
Loved when he became the Juggernaut.
But that's what I was going to say. Colossus was already pretty powerful and could, you know, hold his own. When he got the Juggernaut's powers, he became even more powerful. That he's got the Phoenix powers, I kind of feel like they've underutilized the mechanics of him having all this power. I want to see him blow up. I'm hoping that at the end of this, him walking away, kind of having that thought,
he's going to go, like, do something bad.
You know, well, and what I... One of the things is now that he's got the Phoenix Force, is he completely free of the Juggernaut power?
No, they addressed that. That was awesome because magic brought him to...
Yeah, which one was that?
I'm not sure. I'll see if I can't find it here in a second, though. But magic brings Colossus to the Demon Krytok and says, hey, I've got this power now. You don't need me anymore. And the Demon Krytok's like, no, I know that the Phoenix Force is both an engine of life and destruction.
That's right, that's right.
He's like, you're mine, dude.
And there's been more destruction with you as a hero than there has been other guy.
Yeah, love you much more. And he goes...
I completely forgot.
So he tries to use his Phoenix powers there, and then the Demon Krytok goes, no, a Demon Lord in his realm, the natural order of things does not work here. And basically said, you cannot stop me in my own realm. So therefore, piss off.
So they'll have to get Sidorak out.
Yeah,
yeah,
some other way. But I like that they addressed that issue, though.
Yeah, I completely forgot about that. I know what you're talking about now. Yeah, so. All right, so that pretty much does it for Off the Shelf this week. I got a couple news and notes here that I wanted to bring up in case you guys didn't see. Thought it was kind of interesting, and I wanted to give a shout out, you know, of approval to DC. They delayed the release of Batman Incorporated number 3 after the shootings in Colorado. Apparently, there's a scene in there that they thought would be in poor taste this soon. They are not scrapping the book. The book has been printed. In fact, a few stores did get the book and actually did put it on shelf before they saw the notice. So there are a few of them out there. I just thought it was a very
tasteful move.
Yes. Appropriate thing for DC to do. Just saying, you know, and I don't know exactly what it is. But there were a couple little points in here. Chris Burnham, who is the series artist, had tweeted saying that Batman Inc. number 3 is going to be delayed a month due to some grim imagery that would seem wholly inappropriate given the Aurora killings. The book printed on time. I'm looking at a copy on my desk right now. This isn't a scheduling excuse. We're trying to do the right thing. It's just not a Batman comic with guns in it. There's a specific scene that made DC and the whole Bat team say, yikes, too close for comfort. So I just want to applaud them for doing that. Another little fun note here, Mila Kunis is going to be immortalized in Seth Green's book, The Freshman, or Freshman. The thing is that she told him, though, which I found funny, the only way that she'd do it is if he gave her bigger boobs and a better butt. So, I just thought that was kind of fun. Collecting note here, apparently the book of the year right now is Invincible Iron Man number 55. It's the very first appearance of Thanos. With Thanos being, you know, big bad coming up in the new Avengers movie, everybody's trying to get their hands on these. There was someone at Comic-Con International, I believe, that they did it, guy had a slabbed version that he was trying to sell, and apparently it was a pretty nice book, trying to sell it for $6,000. Mm. Now, I looked in Overstreet, a near mint minus 9.2 unslabbed version of that book would go $325. Now, they are selling slabbed versions I've seen online for, you know, around $1,000 to $1,600, depending. But the guy basically said, he goes, yeah, he goes, I know it's high. He goes, but that's next year's price.
And it's true. And it pisses me off that it's going up. I wish I could have gone to a couple cons earlier in the season before Avengers came out, because I was really looking towards finishing some collections of Thanos.
We liked Thanos before everyone else liked Thanos. Yeah.
Well, and you guys did. I'll admit, I never got too much. But you guys have always been about the cosmic stuff.
Yeah. A little bit, yeah.
So, I've pissed you off with that, so now you understand. I'm going to piss you off again.
Jesus.
let's see, when was it? Yesterday, comic book retailers received an email from Marvel informing them that Thanos, Son of a Titan, a five-issue miniseries by Joe Keating and Richard Ellison, has been canceled.
What?
Yeah. I'm just ruining your whole day today.
Pourquoi?
Yeah. They've not given a reason.
Hmm.
Nothing on there. Don't know if it's going to be, you know, pushed back or whatever, but there you go. It's canceled.
You know, I'd probably say that they're going to try to push it back a little bit, because we still got a couple years before another Avengers title, and they probably don't want to, you know, be too premature with. But then again, at the same time, you could argue that now's the time to strike and get people excited about it. So
yeah,
I don't know what they're doing.
So that's my little bit of news. So
Derek, shut up! I don't want to hear you talk anymore.
Let's see. I've told you about
Phantom X.
Phantom X. I've told you a couple things about Thanos. Have I made you happy with anything I've said today?
Nope. Irresistible.
Irresistible, yeah.
Yeah,
that's pretty happy.
Well, and Mila Kunis with big boobs. She doesn't need them. I think she's smoking hot, but I wouldn't mind seeing what she looks like. I will look at
that. She's got good personality.
Yeah, she looks... I bet you, though, if she had bigger boobs, she'd be really smart. So that is that. On to our segment that we like to call Booze in a Book. This week, it's actually two books, because they do go hand in hand. Issue number one and two of a three-part series from Marvel called The Infernal Man-Thing. It's a story written by the late Steve Gerber. Art is by Kevin Nolan. And I'm going to recommend pairing this with some absinthe. Mm. The real stuff. Wormwood oil and all. Not the crap you get here in the States, but the real, legitimate, you know, hallucinogenic stuff. Why? This book is like taking a tour through a psycho's mind, and honestly, I'm kind of confused. So I think maybe if I was tripping and drunk, I might understand it, and it might make a little bit more sense to me. So that's it for Booze in a Book. On to the Indie Turnpike. This week on the Indie Turnpike, we are not going to talk about a book that is out. This is going to be kind of a little bit of news for you guys. I'm actually sharing this with you as I'm sharing it with our listeners all at the same time. What we have is a couple guys by the name of Brian Harris and Philip Butehorn, who have started a blog site called The Illuminati.
And, oh, good name.
Yeah, I definitely appreciated it. What they are, they're a couple fanboys, and they are writing their own comic book. And they're doing something which I've never heard being done before, and it very well may be the very first time anyone has done anything like this. What they're doing is they're letting fanboys like us read about the development of the book as it's being created. So it's kind of a cool thing. Their debut issue is tentatively scheduled to be out, hopefully, February of 2013. And currently they're doing a couple things, like they're letting fans vote on the title of the book. And then they're also getting other indie artists out there to submit their depictions of the characters. So they're giving the description of the characters, and then the indie artists are doing it, and they're actually having an artist death match where the fans vote on which one they like, what, you know, this and that. It's kind of cool. As for the book itself, it's going to be about a superhero team of 17-year-old kids who are basically just learning how to deal with their new powers, and from what I've read, it's going to be kind of like a Smallville meets Lost type of thing is probably one of the best ways I can describe it. You know, it's going to have These kids are going to have real everyday problems, you know, like still have to study for school, still got to do their chores, but yet they got to go fight crime at the same time. You know, so it's going to be kind of that. The guys are, the two writers, Harris and Buthorn, are working to make it a very real-world setting, even though there's supernatural things to it. One of the things I thought was interesting is that these superheroes don't live in a world where superhero outfits are readily available, so they're going to be wearing, like, lacrosse pads and Under Armour and stuff like that. I mean, they're getting what they have available to them. Now, normally, I would have waited to review this book until after it came out, but because these guys are doing something so unique, I think it's worth a look. It's a very smart marketing campaign. You might even be able to call it a marketing scheme because it's so clever. You know, they're building their fan base before this book gets published.
And they're building the book around the fan base.
Yes.
It'd be an interesting experiment to see if, you know, the fans will create something that they will then go buy.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's actually one of the things that caught me about this. You know, every time we've sat here, you know, whether it's been on a podcast or whether it's been over a couple beers, bitching about, God, why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do that? Here is the fanboys' perfect chance to go on there and give them feedback before the book comes out.
Yeah.
You know, so if you guys want to check them out, go to their blog. You can find it at the Illuminerdy blogspot or .blogspot.com. There is a dash between Illuminerdy. We will put a link up on our page for it, just because it's kind of a long one there. But you can find them on Twitter, you can find them on Facebook, and so hopefully by the time this podcast goes out, we'll have that link up there. So that's the Indie Turnpike.
That sounds, yeah,
cool.
Pretty slick? Yeah. you guys kind of like the idea, I'm assuming.
I'd love to have some feedback for comic books. You know, I've got lots of really good ideas.
Well, that's what, yeah, I wish the big publishers would do something like this and hear us scream to death of, why did you do that? For mm-hmm. whatever, because they're, like you said, we do that all the time, and
yeah, well, it's like, why did they kill Phantom X?
Yes, exactly.
You were the only person that liked him.
Man, you liked him.
I did like him.
Okay, see. You boys were the only.
The thing with, you know, with anything, you know, comic books are about, the major, you know, lines are about making money.
Yes.
But at the same time, they have their artistic integrity. And so the part of that is that being an artist, you do get to create. And, you know, as writers, you know, they take their stories in the directions that they see fit. But I'm often curious how much pressure there is then to take the market data and be like, hey, this character's really hot right now, so let's incorporate them into your story. And the writer kind of going like, if I have to, right?
Yeah.
Not having as much necessary creative control in some of the larger ones, Marvel, DC.
Well,
but the smaller, you know, the indies, you know, fantastic. You know, experiment away, and you know, you never know when it's going to, you know, catch fire. You're going to take a great idea and kind of revolutionize the comic book industry.
Well, you know, and the whole indie versus, you know, big two primarily,
mm-hmm.
That whole thing has gotten very interesting, because it used to be that people did indie books so that they could break into the big two.
Mm-hmm.
Now it seems like people are doing, you know, are working at the big two. Like, they'll do their own indie books, so they get their name out there. They go work for the big two, but then they leave so that they can go do their own, create their own stuff, and truly make the most money that they can.
And so they can have their career, but they can also feel like, you know, I gotta create art the way that I want it to. So.
Yeah. So, little question. This is, we'll kind of get into our collecting. It's not so much as a tip as it is a question for you guys today. Marvel has been doing something, I think, in every one of their books now, where you get the free digital copy with the code in the back.
Mm-hmm.
First, let me ask, what do you guys think of it?
Since I don't necessarily, I haven't really gone online to redeem any of my free digital copies,
mm-hmm.
so I couldn't really tell you how good they are.
Yeah, I haven't did it once because I have the physical copy on hand.
I did it once just to check it out. But here's my question. it's cool. I like the fact that they're doing that. I think it does add more value, you know. But at the same time, as a collector, if I peel that damn sticker back, am I giving myself a lesser grade on the book?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the answer. I'm assuming that by peeling that sticker back, it would take it down, you know, from, say, like, what would be a 9.6 down to a 9.0. Or, because it's not as it came off the shelf.
Pull that sticker back right now.
You just devalued. Now replace it. Stick it upside down.
It's okay. It's one of my. Oh. We'll give everyone the code here. No, we won't.
Well, there's only one. Yeah. Whoever listens to this first gets it.
But.
MTML1.
Don't say it. We don't want Marvel to call us.
DK.
No, I'm going to make loud noises. Loud noises. Stop.
It can only be used once.
Yeah. 2-5. So.
But, that is an interesting question. I would assume that it probably does take the value down. I think that this is very much I think Marvel's trying to do it out there for free so that people will get used to the idea. Hey, I've read some comics online. You know, the cost of printing them is expensive. And,
yes.
And as we go more and more into the digital age, I'm not going to be surprised if from 10 years from now we get very little comic books.
You know, I actually have a hard time seeing that because fanboys are notorious collectors.
It's true.
And, you know,
But maybe sales in physical copies will go down, and it'll be more expensive to buy a physical copy of the book than an ebook. Just like it is, you know, I can go on a Kindle or any other device and download a book for, like, you know, $3, or I could go buy the paperback at a Barnes & Noble for $6.
Yeah.
So it is more expensive to get the physical
copy. Well, and I think the digital issues, I think, are $1.99 if I remember.
Okay, so they already are less expensive.
Yeah, they're, you know, but I don't know. I mean,
I think, though, just reading this, it does not say anything that you physically have to redeem it. It's saying you can redeem your digital copy, meaning it's yours to do with as you please. I encourage everyone that reads comic books to do kind of what I try to do before these jackasses cut me off. Give that free digital copy to someone.
If you're not
going to use it, because you're wasting that code where you could get someone else turned on to comic books.
That's true.
They may buy that comic book and then return the favor and give you a digital code to something else.
Guys at conventions, give those digital comic codes to a girl.
Yeah.
If she takes it, that might be true love, man.
There you go. I'm going to walk around going, want my digital code?
I think that means something else in biological terms.
Yeah.
But.
Not my genetic code, my digital code, man.
I think we're going to start hiding some of these codes on our website in places. So.
You know what I say I have enjoyed are the smartphone pages.
Oh, the
AR apps.
The AR apps. Yeah, those I think have been that's been a really fun way to enhance it. I don't personally have a smartphone yet because I still live in the Stone Age where I like printed copies of books. Mm-hmm. But I looked over with Tony one time. I love the AVX versus with the Scarlet Witch and Magic speaking in Russian, and that you can translate it right there.
Yeah, that was one of the slickest ones that I'd seen.
Yeah, they're not always great, but I think that's the idea that I think if you're merging with digital comics is you could get the digital comic and they would have all those digital features right there for you, or you could have the main book and maybe get some digital goodies to enhance it.
See, I don't know. I'm just such a I have such major issues when it comes to my collecting. I want my books perfect. I don't want them creased. You know, that whole, I want the digital copy so that I can read it on my iPad or I can read it on my phone. But at the same time, I'm not going to devalue my book, which I know is stupid because it's not like I'm ever going to sell these damn things.
But yeah, they're inherited by your... When you give them to me in the time of your timely death.
Yeah, you know, so, but the thing is, too, and I'll keep this short because this is going to be a topic, I think, for another day, is whether or not comics should ever be slabbed. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand the reason that people want to be able to know exactly what it is that they're getting, when they're buying a comic as far as the grade.
But I think they could physically look at it and see, oh, that's got a watermark that's torn. I really hate the people that have to know the perfect percentage of what it is, and having some person arbitrarily come up with that for this one comic book.
My major issue is, you know, that once you've slabbed a comic, yes, you can apparently open them back up, but now that grade is shot.
Yeah.
But once you slab a comic, all you have then is cover art.
You can only judge the book by its cover, though.
Wow.
Full circle.
All right, on that, I think we will move on.
But I hear what you're saying. Yeah, the value of comics, I'm not the type of collector that really anticipates ever reselling my comics. Mm-hmm. Right? If I found out eventually I had a really rare one, and it'll be in decent condition, it probably won't have, you know, mint grade or anything like that, but it'll be in decent condition, because I, you know, do try to not crease it or, you know, let food spill on them. But, you know, ultimately, let the dog use them. But, you know, ultimately, I buy the comics because I hope someday that my little boy is going to be like, hey, what were you reading back then? And if he likes comics, like I like comics, be awesome. But, you know, I wish that my dad had comics back from the 60s and stuff that I could go read.
So, with you being the Duke of Dork, what does that make your son?
What's the Duke's son? I don't know.
Is it an Earl?
The Dookie of Dork? At the moment, he's making some Dookies.
So, yeah. So, a couple very quick points. You guys can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. Obviously, you can find us at drunkoncomics.com. Speaking of drunkoncomics.com, we did add a couple new artists this last week, so check them out. Chuck Jett, Aunt Lucia, and Josh Warner all were added into our artist alley. If any of you know any artists out there, or you artists are an artist yourself and would like to be linked up, just get in touch with us. We are more than happy to help spread the word about what you draw and what you do.
Yep, and one other thing, too. You're going to start seeing a little bit more content being added to the website besides just our podcast when we put that up once a week. We want to make our website the hub of just good old nerdy fun, you know. So we're starting to put some random articles, stuff that's informative, stuff that's just ludicrously silly. Dumb. Yes, just things that hopefully you guys will look at, enjoy, learn a thing or two. And
share with your friends.
And hopefully just laugh at.
They're nuggets of stuff.
Yes.
it's probably.
And so, as we've always said, you know, we like feedback. If you have any ideas that you want us to explore while we're drunk in the comic book world, let us know. We will go get a six-pack, we will sit down, we will come up, we will write, and we'll put it on the web. So just let us know what your thoughts are, what you want us to change, and maybe we might change it.
Yeah, we might, but it all depends. I mean, if they send us in a picture of what they want, like if there's a picture on the front, and then inside that email there's more stuff, I might just check, you know, judge that book by its cover and say no, but... You know, we'll see how it goes.
that joke was lame there. You can come up with that.
I know. I wish I could edit that out.
with the power of computers, I can.
But we're not going to. I killed too many brain cells last night, so screw it. All right, you guys got anything else?
Nah.
All right. Well, say goodbye, Matt.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Tony.
Nanu, nanu.
And I am Derek, and on behalf of all of us here at Drunk on Comics, keep reading them, and we will be back to talk to you about them next week.